The following podcast contains true stories of sex, kink, gender, or body image. Thanks for being a consenting adult, because here we go.
All of my life, I've never fit, but I won't complain and I won't quit. I am enormous, get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me. Can't you see? I'm the kind of woman I'm supposed to be.
I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the Body Storytelling Podcast. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, and this week we have a story from BDSM, LGBTQIA, consensual non-monogamy, and certified sexuality educator, Phoenix Mandel. I have a question. How do you feel about being called a pervert? I mean, when I see my friends out in public, I usually say, hey, pervert, because it's a term of love. And I'm one. To me, it just means someone who thinks about it and admits that they think about and talks about sex in an open, sex-positive way. But does it have a different feel for you? I don't want to call you anything you don't want to be called, because that's been the way I've operated for 17-plus years. I check in. And before I introduce somebody on stage, I'm like, how do you prefer that I refer to you? So I want to do the same thing for you. This is the part of the podcast I would say hi, but I don't know your name, and there's a lot of you. So, what feels good to you? That's the direction I want to head in. I thought I'd ask that. Message me and let me know. It makes me so happy to hear from you. And I got an email the other day from somebody saying, Dixie, I hope you're recovering from your cross-country trip. We haven't heard from you in a while. You've been very silent. What's going on? And I want to tell you that what I have been doing since I returned has been taking every single bit of my strength. If you were following along on social media, I had a dear friend, Rachel Sad. We referred to her as McCrafty. She was battling cancer, and she was planning to attend my last workshop in person, an all-day workshop in San Francisco, because she felt like the medical community did not listen to her. As a fat brown woman, they just basically kept saying, lose weight. They wouldn't give her tests. They just kept saying, it's your imagination. And by the time they found the cancer, they had told her, there's one thing we can do. We're down to a last ditch effort because, you know, obviously it's your fault. And so when I talked to her, she really wanted to learn how to tell her story to help other people advocate for themselves. But on the day of the workshop, she was too sick and she couldn't attend. And so we had a conversation and I said, well, I'm about to go on tour, but I'll be back and I'll be doing another workshop, or you and I can work one-on-one. I really want to help you tell this story. And she said, well, by then we'll know something, because this last ditch thing they're doing with my cancer, they said by mid-January, we'll know if it worked or not. And then I got an email around mid-January that said, great news, the doctor said that she was in remission. There was a big celebration, and I thought, great, Rachel and I will get to work. She'll be healthier by the time I return from the East Coast tour. And then toward the end of February, I got a phone call while I was at my best friend Lil P's house in upstate New York, getting ready to drive back across the country. And our friend Suzanne had called. She'd checked on social media to make sure that P and I were together so we could support each other. And she let us know that Rachel had died. It was a secondary complication and totally unexpected. And when you don't know what happened, you're just like, how could that be? She's in remission. Like, this was less than a month ago. They said things were looking so bright, and it didn't happen. So I was really gloomy as I drove back across the country. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't stop anywhere. I was just in my head, thinking about how fast life can be taken from you, because there's been a lot of that lately. And I wanted to be involved in McCrafty's memorial, but then it turned out that I'm the only one who can speak into a microphone. So somehow I'm in the front of the room now. And as an event producer, if I'm going to be in the front of the room, I'm going to say, here's how we need to do these things. And the other people are grieving people. They're not event producers. So it's been a lot. I've been having weekly meetings where we get together, we discuss what's been accomplished, what the plans are. And every week I'm up till 4 o'clock in the morning because it's really upsetting and it takes a lot out of me. This week I have my last planning meeting, and this Saturday is her memorial. And as I've been trying to get people to speak about this person who did nothing but give, she gave to every community that I know. She was very active in the Burning Man community. She was the person who cooked for 250 people at our weirdo campouts. She would organize for fundraising for art studios that burned down unexpectedly. Her studio was one of the things that burned down, yet she was organizing for everybody else. She's best known as the executive director of Ace Makerspace, which is a place where you can get together and build if you're a maker. You know, you can learn how to sew, you can learn how to serge, you can learn 3D printing, anything makery. She was in charge of it and very passionate about it. So I'm working on getting people to talk about her and talk about the impact she made on our lives. Please, please learn how to get up in front of people and speak into a microphone. This has been so hard. Everybody's terrified of speaking. Even if I opt not to have a microphone, and I'm worried about that because of the acoustics of this large room we're doing this event in, people are terrified to speak. And it's really making me flashback on something that happened a few years ago. My stepfather, Buck, was the sweetest man. And when he got cancer, he's the kind who's this Southern man who just wears bib overalls all the time. And when I asked him what kind of cancer he said, I don't know, Dix. I don't want to bother them doctors. I mean, didn't even know the kind of cancer he had. He decided to donate his body to the body farm when he died. So when he died, I came into town. I was going to be there as part of the, you know, supporting my mother and everything. And when she went to go deal with things related to his death, I offered to go with her, and she said no. And when she came back, she said, we're having a ceremony this Saturday. And I'm like, well, that's different. What changed? And she said, well, I don't want people saying I'm cheap. So I just bought a $7,000 coffin and rented a room at the funeral home so we can have a celebration of life. Well, it wasn't what he wanted. But more importantly, for over an hour, we sat in a room where no one would get up and say a word about it. They were too afraid to speak into a microphone. This is a man who spent over 80 years on the earth, changing things, just doing for people, just a good-hearted person. But everybody was too afraid to get up and speak. The only one who really spoke was my brother Jay. That was it. And that does not fill an hour. Having the funeral director stand there and go, I didn't know him, but he sounded like a good guy. Not really what you want to hear when you're grieving someone's death. So I've been trying to get people to speak about Rachel, and nobody will. And while we're doing that, I have a friend who's been doing photography for my show for years. And Rachel was one of the first people to come along when I had just gotten started. And she said, you need a website. I'm gonna build you one. You need, and she would help me. She ran the door when we were tiny. She was always there. And she helped me name things, set up and break down at the end of every night. Nothing but support. And there's no pictures of her. She was a fat woman. She didn't like having her picture taken. All of this is a way to say, you're here once. Speak into a microphone. Talk about the things you love. Talk about the people you love. Let people take pictures of you and get in the group shot. And let people have these moments. Because one day you'll be gone. And that's all they'll have. And that's what we want. If you're put on earth, you want to be remembered. You know you do. So let people remember you. It might mean you don't love the photo of yourself. I honestly don't love photos of myself at all. I also don't like my voice. But here I am recording a podcast. Because this is my legacy. And what you do is your legacy too. So take pictures. Find ones you like. Work with a photographer if it helps you. Find something that you like so that we have some way to remember you, so that your family has a way to remember you. On Saturday, we'll be celebrating McCrafty, and I'm hoping I'm not the only one who's willing to speak into a microphone about how she changed my life. I'm hoping that the slideshow will have more photos than we've found so far, because there haven't been many. And I know there's been a lot of death in my life lately, and I'm sorry that I'm talking about it. But when you ask me what's been going on, this is it. I'm hoping that after we finish this celebration of life, that I'm going to be able to get back to doing what I'm known for doing. I had a lot of thoughts as I drove cross country, and some things are going to change. There's going to be some big changes, but I haven't been able to focus on them because you get one chance to celebrate people you love. And for me, that's going to be this week. Okay, are you happy? You got me to cry on this episode. I blame you. But now we're going to talk about happier times. As many of you know, my friend Reed Mahalko throws something called Sex Geek Summer Camp, which is summer camp in Portland, Oregon, designed for sex educators and pleasure enthusiasts and advocates of a sex-positive lifestyle. And I taught there last year. I had a lot of anxiety about driving in Edna the minivan all the way to Portland, but it was the perfect trip. And when I got there, I feel like I made, 80 new best friends. It was so exactly what I needed. One of those new best friends told me a story, and I went, "You live in the Bay Area. Why don't we get you on stage?" Not long after camp, I put on my big kinktacular in honor of Folsom Street Fair. And they got on stage and told the story they had told me at summer camp. So now you're going to get to hear this story. But first, let me introduce you to the storyteller. Phoenix Mandel is a certified sexuality educator providing education, counseling, and consulting services in Oakland, California, traveling on location, and offers those services virtually. They specialize in BDSM, LGBTQIA+, consensual non-monogamy, sex positivity, and other areas of diverse self-expression and sexual rights. You can learn more at phoenixmandel.com, and there's links in the show notes. I'd like to introduce you to my friend, Phoenix Mandel.
I'm new to Oakland, actually, so I want to be friends with everybody who lives here. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. So, I'm about to enter this actually rather large and mysterious seeming apartment on Oxford Street. I have my hand on the doorknob and I'm feeling a little nervous but very excited. And I open the door and the very first thing I see is this androgynous blonde chained to a cross in the corner and a pile of about 7 or 8 people fucking in the middle of the living room floor, and interspersed throughout, people with those red party solo cups and little snack plates just having a normal house party. And I think to myself, fuck, no one told me it was a play party. I would have negotiated with my master before I got here if I knew that, and also brought some toys. Ugh. But let me take you back for a second before we get into this surprise sex party. I was in Vancouver. It's winter of 2012, and if any of you have lived in places with real winter, you know it's not the best friend-making possibilities in that environment. And I'm working a travel nanny gig, so I'm spending all of my time with this family and this little girl who alternates between, you know, that sweet, nourishing young mind and, oh, what's that movie where they had to have the priest in? The Exorcist, you know, that one. And I'm just all kids and family things all the time. And I'm also really missing my kink family back home. I'm a slave in a master-slave relationship. I'm an alpha to similar submissives. I had at the time been a professional dom and a professional sub and a kink performer, and I'm just missing all of that. And I have a Friday night off. It's my first Friday night off, and I need some grown-up conversation and somewhere else to go where no one with kids will bother me, just for the night. I'm, you know, just for the night. And I meet this woman, Sylvie, and she invites me to this little house gathering that she's having. And so off I go for my first Friday night with grown-ups and time off. And I land at this party that is a very clearly a play party with sex party vibes and kink party vibes and, you know, just that social thing you do in the winter. And I have not made arrangements with my master to really do much of anything. The one important rule being that I can't fuck anyone new without talking to him about it. Now, it's a Friday night, I know. I was younger then. But at the time, I was very invested in being a good girl. Very, very invested in that. And while that's no longer my kink orientation or my gender, it was so important to me at the time. And I know he's at his own kink party that night and won't have his phone on him, and there is no way to have this conversation. But I've been looking forward to this, and I can be at a party and not fuck new people. I can do that. That's within my powers. So I decide I'm gonna stay. And I go in and I ask someone about where my host Sylvie is, and they point to that pile of eight people I saw fucking in the middle of the living room, and I identify her remarkably by her hair, but there's also someone sitting on her face, and so she seems quite busy and not available to meet me at that moment. So I make my way back to where the snacks are, and I fix myself a drink. And I'm standing there for just a few seconds when this luscious, buxom Jessica Rabbit-type redhead literally lands in front of me. She has a superhero pose that she bounces into, you know, the power pose you get when you're trying to really make an impact. And she's just brimming with excitement, giddiness, really. And she has on, sort of thrust forward, the center of her excitement, this big, sparkly purple cock with a very lovely accessorized purple harness. So, like, accessory game on point. And she's standing there with this cock, and she introduces herself. Her name's Veronica. And she has a mission, and she wants to invite me into this mission. And she tells me, I'm going to fuck every femme at the party with this. And then she looks at me. And again, I think to myself, fuck. And I look at her and I say, well, let's talk about what your interests are first. And so we start flirting and getting to know each other and talking about fetishes, and she loves to be called a dirty slut, and who know, I like to call people that sometimes when I'm not in my slave role, and it just seems like such a good opportunity for that. But I let her know that I'm not available for fucking in that moment, but also that I'm a deeply kinky person, and surely there's something we can figure out. And so we're trying to get creative, and the conversation's stimulating, and I'm starting to feel these little bits of electricity along my skin, and she's sort of batting her eyes at me and touching my arm, and it gets so hot that our breathing is actually coming a little rapid and shallow, and we are just I am really ready to go here, and I am so frustrated. I am crawling out of my skin about this. And eventually, someone comes by and grabs her hand, and they wander off, and I respect it. She's got a mission. We'll connect later. And I'm trying to settle myself back down. You know, a little dab of a wet paper towel, and my cup is empty. Shit, I should fix that. And what am I going to do about this situation? And up walks this lumberjack, sturdy, brunette, beardy guy, introduces himself as Hunter. And I remember thinking to myself, maybe, but not of me. And he offers to go get me a drink. And as he's walking away to get me the drink, I notice he's got a sweet little ass. And as he comes back to bring me my drink, he sort of hands it to me with a particular, I don't know, flourish. And we start flirting. And when you know, we both love primal play, go figure. And we're talking about all of these different areas of interest, and he's sort of adjusting himself and stroking his beard, and there's a lot of physical movement happening in this conversation. And my panties are just soaked at this point. And I feel like there are, what's that expression, flames on the side of my face of frustration that no one told me this was a play party, and I would have done the responsible thing and worked myself out for this had I known. I'm racking my brain, trying to find something kink-wise and, or, you know, technically following the letter of the law, if not the spirit of the law, that I can do here. And eventually it comes to me in a flash of light, this big aha. I feel the most brilliant I've ever felt in my entire life. And I realize I want to fuck Veronica, I want to fuck Hunter, I cannot fuck either of these people, but maybe I'll have them fuck each other for my amusement. And I just feel so smart and committed to this course of action. And so I pitch the idea to Hunter, and he's pretty into it. He's disappointed not to be able to fuck me, and he's wasn't quite anticipating my orientation of things, whereby I'm gonna, of course, have Veronica fuck him, because the new cock has got to be used. But ultimately, he's a yes. And so we go off to find Veronica. And we find Veronica and we pitch the idea to her. And even though this wasn't the exact mission that she had in mind, she feels like it's fulfilling a higher purpose. And so she is also in. And I'm a very good negotiator. And so we do all of our negotiating and we get ready to play. And we're watching out for a available surface. You know how it is. And something opens up and we jump on it. And immediately we noticed just a tiny problem we forgot to address, which is that somehow in all of our negotiating, we hadn't shown Hunter Veronica's cock. Whoops. And it turns out it's bigger. It's bigger than he's used to. It's bigger than he's used to. But we're already there. We've all committed to have this beautiful moment with each other. And, you know, giving him free choice, of course, we both just let him know how incredibly juicy and wet and delicious it would be for him to take this cock. And he's in again. He's for it. And, you know, I reassure him that I'll be giving him soothing back touches, and I'll be telling them everything to do. He doesn't even have to think about it at all. He just has to be a good boy. So I start them off with him on all fours and her standing behind him. And I'm, you know, being very careful not to touch anyone's bits, just to give good direction and a little available assistance where I can. And I'm pouring, you know, almost half a bottle of lube onto his ass. She's spreading him open. He's getting a little nervous again. There's a little quiver to his lip. And I'm telling him, you are such a good boy. And I like that you're a little bit afraid. And he likes that I like that he's a little bit afraid. And his ass gets a little bit higher, and Veronica's eyes get a little bit wider. She gets a little prouder in her cock stance. And in we go. And the noises that occurred at first, I would say, were somewhat on the titillating side and somewhat on the, ooh, someone was monitoring the sound way too high in that porno, but it's going okay. And then we really find our flow, and I'm repositioning them in other ways that I like, and letting her know what a strong, powerful slut she is, and telling him how hungry for him it makes me, the way he's taking that cock, and how I wish it were my cock, and also that I wish I could be in his mouth at the same time. And we're having a blast. And I notice that we're sort of starting to gather a crowd, but I am focused. I am making the action happen here. And I switch them to another position, and now his legs are in the air, and she's kneeling on the bed in front of him, and I hand her a vibrator, you know, the classic Hitachi. Thank goodness someone had one that just worked for the plugs there, so keep that in mind when you're traveling. And she's getting, you know, starting to get herself off while fucking him, and the vibration is going into his ass and stimulating his prostate, and it's fucking magical. The sex educator in me is like, pow, pow, and the switch in me is like, pow, pow, pow. And it's beautiful. And then, of course, I have to tell them that they're not allowed to come without my permission, which they're both very disappointed by, but seem to understand to be part of the setup. And we just keep going like that with different positions and me egging them on and finding what's the most satisfying aesthetic viewpoint or what makes the best noises. And eventually, I've had my fill and I tell them that they can come. And at the moment of orgasm, which was not simultaneous, but was pretty close, at the moment of orgasm, there's this release of cum energy that I feel like just kind of hits me, you know, here and here. For our radio listeners, I'm touching my chest and my crotch, in case you couldn't tell. And I just feel full of this in-chargeness and this metaphysical orgasm, whereby I did not technically break the rules, but also I feel full of cum. And it's magical and heroic. Thank you. And then we, you know, clear out of the way because other people need to play. And we're in a little cuddle puddle debrief aftercare moment. And we decide we're not going to exchange any information. We're just going to take this beautiful moment in time for what it was. And up comes my host, Sylvie, who says, "You must be Phoenix. Wow. Great scene. Bit of a director fetish, eh?" And even though I had been deeply, deeply involved in kink in a variety of ways at this point, I had never heard of a director fetish or realized that I had it, but boy, did I really have it. And, you know, that was some years ago, many years ago, over 10 years ago, you can do math. And even though my gender is different now and my romantic orientations are different now, I'm proud to say today that I am the very proud daddy of this slut right here. I realized a valuable lesson that night. And what I learned was, no matter how sure of your fetishes you are, no matter how deeply kinky or kink experienced you think you've been, there are always new paths to explore and new ways to play.
Mouth. Your face has turned pale, can't faint, you're not well. you better run away now. Oh, oh, you've made a mistake now. Oh, oh, got nothing else to say to you.
That song was Uh-Oh by Suburban, featuring Benet. I was somebody who grew up very poor. I grew up in a trailer park. Our family was busted, and the best we ever ate was when we went on food stamps one time when my stepfather lost his job. So the idea of growing up to be an artist was something that I never believed was possible. And yet here I am. I'm a professional storyteller, and that's an art. And I help people make art out of their lives. That would not be possible without the people who support me on Patreon. Patreon is a way to be a patron of the arts, to ensure that the things you love, like this podcast, can continue to exist. And I can tell you, it's been tough. The pandemic really did a number on things, and I don't want to stop. Going cross country and hearing people tell me about how these stories resonated with them, changed their lives, made them feel brave, made them change their boring everyday existence, and they felt inspired to live the life they'd always dreamed of because of a story. If you want to continue receiving these stories, I'm begging you, please support me on Patreon. It's patreon.com/body. Any level you can support me at is really, really making a huge difference. And if Patreon's not your thing, there's lots of other resources. It's in the show notes for this episode. Cash App, Venmo, PayPal, Zelle, all of those things if you want to do a one-time donation. But if you're listening, then this is important to you. And I want to continue to produce art that feels important. And thank you for considering it. Well, I want to congratulate you on making it all the way to the end, because I recently saw a survey that said 34% of people don't listen to podcasts because they don't know how to. Not only do you know how, you listened all the way through this episode. Thanks for doing that. And thank you to the people who make this podcast possible. Thank you to David Grossoff, Mosa Maxwell-Smith, Donald Mooney, and podcast producer Roman Denhoudiger. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, and this has been episode 289 of the Bawdy Storytelling Podcast. Thanks for listening.